Good Tuesday morning. It is daybreak. Tuesdays during the legislative session, well, that can only mean one thing. Senator Drew McEwen checking in with us about what is going on for the 35th District, Western Washington, and the state as a whole. He represents, of course, Mason County, parts of Kitsap, and parts of Thurston. You can find him by Googling Drew McEwen. His last name is M-A-C-E-W-E-N. And you will find his sites and ways to contact him, taking a look at his bills, ways of getting on a mailing list to stay posted. It's very important that you stay active out there and get out there and vote, and especially if you know what you're doing. If you don't know what you're doing, please stay home and don't vote. We don't want people out there just kind of, you know, some people mark those things, Senator, like it's a lottery, you know, quick pick or something. We don't want people voting that way. We want people to be educated on the issues, and a lot of stuff happening in Olympia, the legislative session ending in about a month. Well, Senator McEwen, welcome back to Daybreak. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. And I know you don't have much time here, so I want to talk about a specific bill we'll get to here in just a moment, but also as we're looking at really the last month of this long session, we've got budget rollouts coming. What does that look like? What can people expect from that?
Yep, over the next week here, both the House and the Senate will release their versions of the operating budget, the capital budget, and the transportation budget. And this is kind of a key milestone in every session because then they're voted off the respective chamber floors and then go to conference to get the finalized versions done. And while, you know, I suspect the operating budget is going to, in my opinion, probably be spending way more than it needs to be, I do look forward to seeing the capital budget and the transportation budget. Myself and Reps Griffey and Couture, we've been working hard to get some things handled for the 35th District, and I'm fairly confident that those are going to be in the transportation and the capital budget. So I look forward to seeing those versions, and hopefully we've got what we need in both chambers, and it'll make it for a little bit easier sailing going into the end. So yep, looking forward to that, and get some needed infrastructure dollars flown into the district, or to keep flowing into the district, I should say. We've done a good job over the years getting a fair amount here, and just keep trying to continue that trend.
Here's a question that I know a lot of people probably have as well, and we hear from Governor Inslee periodically, you know, there's a big surplus of money in the state of Washington, and then, you know, we read down the road, it's like, oh, we're minus, you know, $50 million, whatever it happens to be. What happens when we're running a surplus? I'm just curious, as we're talking about budgets, can that money be protected? I mean, it's almost like little kids that get their allowance and they want to spend it all and they don't save a penny. Can't we? I mean, how does that work? If I read in the headlines that Governor Inslee is proud that the state of Washington's in great shape, we're $100 million ahead or whatever, what can we do with that money? Do we have to spend it? Does it have to be spent on something, whether it's transportation or public safety or education, or can some of that be just set aside so that when the rainy day comes, and we know it will, we have the funds to cover it? I don't like reading stories where we have this huge surplus and all of a sudden, well, we kind of do, but now we don't because we spent it on this, and this. How does that work?
We have a budget stabilization account that requires extraordinary revenues, which there's a formula for it, to be deposited in there. Unfortunately, and then to tap that fund requires a 2/3 vote in both chambers, so it's got a higher threshold to, and we have tapped it in the past when we've needed to, and there's been strong bipartisan support. Some good examples are, you know, when we've had wildfires beyond control that have cost a tremendous amount of money. We've utilized the budget stabilization account / rainy day fund. And then also when at the beginning of the COVID pandemic, we tapped it to utilize for some needs that were there. And so we've done that in the past on a strong bipartisan basis. But unfortunately, 2 years ago, the Democrats put a new measure into the budget that circumvents that rainy day fund and puts it into an account that requires a simple majority to spend. And that bothers me a great deal. We'll be playing games with the rainy day fund. And we, you know, and then we also have the ending fund balance. To answer your question, no, we don't have to spend it all, but they often do, or leave insignificant amounts of money behind for, quote, emergencies. And, you know, like in the last budget, it was $250 million, which to you and me is a heck of a lot of money, of course. But in the context of a $65 billion budget, it's not much. That would be the same as somebody making $100,000 a year, having $200 set aside for an emergency. It's insignificant. And I've been sounding this alarm for the last few biennium that we are spending way too much. We're growing way too fast. And we're not set up to weather an economic storm. And there's a lot of clouds on the horizon right now. And I don't want to be, Eeyore and always say there's, you know, the sky's falling, it's, you know, things. But we've got to be able to be in a position that allows us to get through these things. Because when the storm hits, the things that are needed the most are the things that get cut, because they're the only ones you have a lot of discretion over. And that's what the state did in the 2008 financial crisis. The very services that were needed were the ones that were cut, because it was the only things they had, strong discretionary authority over. So I've been disappointed in the last few years in how the budgeting process has worked, and I think we could do better.
Well, I appreciate that. Let's talk about the Puget Sound Energy Decarbonization Bill. That's a mouthful. What is that, and where does it stand right now in the legislature?
Yeah, this passed out of the House a couple weeks ago, and then we heard it in the Senate Energy Committee on Friday. And it's looking like it's moving towards passage. It's frankly, to me, in my opinion, it's Puget Sound Energy playing politics to give themselves a better deal. And basically, in a nutshell, would prevent any new natural gas hookups 100 days from now. And, you know, and they're trying to play, I think, frankly, they're playing into the governor's political hand here and saying, oh, look what we're doing. The reality is Puget Sound Energy does not have the electrical generating capacity or the transmission capacity to be able to replace those future natural gas hookups. They just don't. So what's going to happen is you're going to have ratepayers that are in the Puget Sound Energy Network paying, you know, potentially up to 30% more on their energy bill, just so that Puget Sound Energy can say, oh, look, we're decarbonizing. And the other part of this bill that just strikes me is that it gives them preferential treatment on new generating facilities. And they have not had the best track record in winning those bids in the past. And so they're doing something over here to get political favor in order to gain some of these contracts down the road. And I resent that kind of legislation. They could do what this bill proposes without legislation. But they're trying to, again, curry political favor. I have a real hard time with that type of politics, and working hard to defeat this bill, because I think it sets a horribly bad precedent. Look, if we're going to decarbonize and get away from natural gas, let's have that discussion as a state and do it across the board. And again, I think there's a lot of issues with that. But that's a whole, the point is let's be politically and intellectually consistent in what we do here.
Yeah, it's just like Governor Inslee's mandate for the electric cars. He's copying the California playbook, Senator, which if you look at California, it's like trying to emulate a third world country to be successful. You don't do that. I mean, California is in the worst shape it's been since I can remember. I was born and raised there and spent the first 48 years of my life there or whatever. And it is a disaster. And why Governor Inslee wants to model Washington after the most disastrous state out there, I just don't even, I can't comprehend it. But these mandates for all electricity, what people may not know here, and it's a harbinger of what's going to come here too, is that the electrical grid in California is taxed to the max. They have rollouts, blackouts, rolling blackouts. If they tell you when you can dry your clothing and when you can use your washing machine, they tell you, I mean, that's not even considering water, where they tell you how long your shower can be, or else they'll fine you $1,000 a week sometimes, or whatever they do. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's not set up. The grid is not set up for this quickly anyway. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't move towards maybe electric, but we're not ready for it yet. And they keep wanting to shove these things way too soon, years, maybe decades before they're ready you know, the infrastructure is ready for them, and it's going to, it's going to be a disaster.
Yeah, we are not set up for success on our infrastructure right now, and that's where our focus should be. And I fear what the consequences could be for especially for low income citizens in our state that will have a very difficult time pivoting to a 30% increase in their utility bill.
Oh, that's catastrophic for people. Well, Senator, I appreciate hearing from you this week. We'll chat with you next week, see what's going on as we get ready to wind down right around next month, this time, the legislative session, which is the long one this year. And we appreciate your availability and your honesty and your passion for these subjects. And we'll talk with you next week.
Sounds good. Have a great week.
Hey, you too. Thank you very much. That's Senator Drew McEwen serving Mason County, parts of Thurston, and parts of Kitsap County for the 35th Legislative District. Again, you can Google his name, last name M-A-C-E-W-E-N, and find his legislative page and all the bills he's sponsoring, how to get in contact with him and stay in touch with what's going on in Olympia. We all need to do that. This is Daybreak, and we will continue. Good morning. This is 10:30 a.m., FM 103.3 online. We're at KMAS.com. Just a reminder, you can download one of many radio apps, or have several on your phone, and dial into KMAS wherever you are today. And also, tell that smart device of yours to listen to KMAS.